Chapter 10. Mrs. Tiggywinkle. Kierkegaard book-burning ceremony proves Danish philosopher's unpopularity. Article in The Toad, July 14, 1988. Chancellor Yorick Kane last night officiated at the first burning of Danish literature with the incineration of 8 copies of Fear and Trembling, a quantity that fell far short of the expected 30 or 40 tons. When asked to comment on the apparent lack of enthusiasm among the public to torch their Danish philosophy, Kane explained that
Kierkegaard is clearly less popular than we thought, and rightly so. Next stop, Hans Christian Andersen.
Kierkegaard himself was unavailable for comment, having inconsiderately allowed himself to be dead for a number of years. I was dreaming that a large chainsaw-wielding elephant was sitting on me when I awoke at 2 in the morning. I was still fully dressed, with a snoring Friday fast asleep on my chest. I put him back in his cot and turned the bedside lamp to the wall to soften the light. My mother, for reasons known only to herself, had kept my bedroom pretty much as it was from the time I had left home. It was nostalgic, but also deeply disturbing to see just what had interested me in my late teens. It seemed like it had been boys, music, Jane Austen, and law enforcement, but not particularly in that order. I undressed and slipped on a long T-shirt and stared at Friday's sleeping form, his lips making gentle sucky motions. "Psst," said a voice close at hand. I turned. There, in the semi-dark, was a very large hedgehog, dressed in a pinafore and bonnet. She was keeping a close lookout at the door, and after giving me a wan smile, crept to the window and peeked out.
"Whoa!" she breathed in wonderment. "Street lights are orange. Never would have thought of that."
"Mrs. Tiggywinkle," I said, "I've only been gone 2 days."
"Sorry to bother you," she said, curtsying quickly and absently folding my shirt, which I had tossed over a chair back. "But there are one or two things going on that I thought you should know about, and you did say if I had any questions to ask."
"Okay, but not here. We'll wake Friday." So we crept downstairs to the kitchen. I pulled down the blinds before turning the lights on, as a 6-foot hedgehog in a bonnet might have caused a few eyebrows to be raised in the neighbourhood. No one wore bonnets in Swindon these days. I offered Mrs. Tiggywinkle a seat at the table.
"Orange! Never would have thought of that. Post-1867, and Vernon Dean is
none of them had the leadership skills necessary to do the job on their own. And while the Council of Genres refused to concede that my absence was anything but compassionate leave, a new bellman was yet to be elected in my place. "So what's up?" I asked.
"Oh, Miss Next," she wailed, her spines bristling with vexation. "Please come back."
"I have things to deal with out here," I explained. "You all know that."
"I know," she sighed. "But Emperor Jacques threw a tantrum when I suggested he spend a little less time conquering the universe and a little more time at jurisfiction. The Red Queen won't do anything post-1867, and Vernon Dean is tied up with the latest Daphne Farquhar novel. Commander Bradshaw does his own thing, which leaves me in charge, and someone left a saucer of bread and milk on my desk this morning."
It was probably just a joke.
"Well, I'm not laughing," replied Mrs. Tiggywinkle indignantly.
"By the way," I said, as a thought suddenly struck me, "did you find out which book Yorick Kane escaped from?"
"I'm afraid not. The cat is searching unpublished novels in the well of lost plots at the moment, but it might take a little time. You know how chaotic things are down there."
"Only too well," I sighed, thinking about my old home in unpublished fiction with a mixture of fondness and relief. The well was where books are actually constructed, where plotsmiths create the stories that authors think they write. You can buy plot devices at discount rates and verbs by the pint. An odd place, to be sure. "Okay," I said finally, "you'd better tell me what's going on."
"Well," said Mrs. Tiggywinkle, counting the points out on her claw, "this morning a rumour of potential change in the copyright laws swept through the book world."
I don't know how these rumours get started, I replied wearily. Was there any truth in it?
Not in the least.
This was a contentious subject to the residents of the book world. The jump to copyright-free public domain status had always been a fearful prospect for a book character. And even with support groups and training courses to soften the blow, the narrative menopause could take some getting used to. The problem is that copyright laws tend to vary around the world, and sometimes characters are in public domain in one market and not in another, which is confusing. Then there is the possibility that the law might change, and characters who had adjusted themselves to a public domain status would find themselves in copyright again, or vice versa. Unrest in the book world in these matters is palpable. It only takes a small spark to set off a riot. So all was well?
Pretty much.
Good. Anything else?
Starbucks wants to open another coffee shop in the Hardy Boys series.
Another one? I asked with some surprise. There's already 16. How much coffee do they think they can drink?
Tell them they can open another in Mrs. Dalloway and two more in The Age of Reason. After that, no more.
What else?
The tailor of Gloucester needs 3 yards of cherry-coloured silk to finish the mayor's embroidered coat, but he's got a cold and can't go out.
Who are we? Interlink? Tell him to send his cat, Simkin.
Okay.
There was a pause. You didn't come all this way to tell me bad news about Kane, copyright panics and cherry-coloured twist, now did you? She looked at me and sighed.
There is a bit of a problem with Hamlet.
I know, but he's doing a favour for my mother at the moment. I'll send him back in a few days.
Replied the hedgehog nervously. It's a bit more complex than that. I think it might be a good idea if you kept him out here for a bit longer.
What's going on? I asked suspiciously.
It wasn't my fault, she burst out, reaching for her pocket handkerchief. I thought the internal plot adjustment request was to sort out the seasonal anomalies, all that death in the orchard, then winter, then flowers.
What happened? I asked again. Mrs. Tiggywinkle looked miserable.
Well, you know there has been much grumbling unrest within Hamlet ever since Rosencrantz and Guildenstern got their own play.
Yes.
Well, just after you left, Ophelia attempted a coup d'etat in Hamlet's absence. She imported a B6 Hamlet from Lamb's Shakespeare and convinced him to reenact some of the key scenes with a pro-Ophelia bias.
And?
Well, said Mrs. Tiggywinkle, they retitled it The Tragedy of the Fair Ophelia, Driven Mad by the Callous Hamlet, Prince of Denmark.
She's always up to something, isn't she? I'll give her hey nonny nonny. Tell her to get back into line or we'll slap a Class 2 fiction infraction on her so fast it'll make her head spin.
We tried that, but Laertes returned from Paris and lent his voice to the revolution. Together they made some more changes, and it is now called The Tragedy of the Noble Laertes, who avenges his sister, the fair Ophelia, driven mad by the callous and murderous Hamlet, Prince of Denmark.
I ran my fingers through what remained of my hair.
So? Arrest them both? Too late. Their father, Polonius, was in a have-a-go mood and joined in. He also made changes, and together they renamed it The Tragedy of the Very Witty and Not Remotely Boring Polonius, Father of the Noble Laertes, who avenges his fair sister Ophelia, driven mad by the callous, murderous and outrageously disrespectful Hamlet, Prince of Denmark.
What was it like?
With Polonius? Very wordy.
We could replace them all, carried on Mrs. Tiggywinkle. But changing so many major players in one swoop might cause irreparable damage. The last thing we need right now is Hamlet coming back and sticking his oar in.
You know how mad he gets when anybody even suggests a word change.
Right, I said. Here's the plan. This is all happening in the 1623 folio edition, yes? Mrs. Tiggywinkle nodded her head. Okay, move Hamlet, or whatever it is called at present, to a disused story code engine, and fire up the Penguin Modern Hamlet. So that is the one everyone in the Outland will read. It will give us some breathing space without anyone seeing the Polonized version.
It won't be at its best, but it'll have to do. Horatio must still be on Hamlet's side, surely. Most definitely. Then deputize him to jurisdiction and try to get him to convince the Polonius family to attend an arbitration session. Keep me posted. I'll try to keep Hamlet amused out here. She made a note. Is that all? I asked.
Not unless you need some washing done.
I have a mother who will fight you for that. Now, please, please, Mrs. Tiggywinkle, you must leave me to sort out Kane and get my husband back.
You're right, she said after a short pause. We're going to handle this all on our own.
Good.
Right.
Well, good night, then.
Yes, said the hedgehog. Good night.
She stood there on the kitchen linoleum, tapping her paws together and staring at the ceiling. Tiggy, what is it?
It's Mr. Tiggywinkle, she burst out at last. He came home late last night in a state of shock and smelling of car exhaust, and I'm so worried.
It was about 3 in the morning when I was finally left alone with my thoughts, a sleeping son, and a pocket handkerchief drenched with hedgehog tears.